The Business on RTE Radio 1 with AIB. It takes a certain kind of brave to run a business. We see it, we back it.
Well, we all know great leaders need good creative solutions, especially in COVID times with staff shortages, etc. But where does creativity come from? Professor Colin Doherty, consultant neurologist at St. James's Hospital, brings us on a journey from birds and bears to Bolero.
If you're of a certain age, you'll remember the milkman on frosty mornings dropping off glass bottles on doorsteps all round built-up areas. The bottles full of the white liquid and rich cream that rose to the top. A lovely suburban scene. But there was a problem. Starting in the mid-70s, the blue tit, a small bird native to these islands, learned how to puncture the aluminium cap and suck the rich cream from the bottle. Extremely quickly, over two winters in fact, all of the blue tits in the UK and Ireland had learned this practice. They had passed on the word, they had tweeted the word round to their friends and family. But what do birds have to do with human creativity, you might ask? Well, in the world of science, one branch, pardon the pun, of understanding human creativity is to look at what's called comparative neurobiology, to compare human behaviour with that of animals. When it comes to creativity, we've mostly looked at our closest relative, the primate. But their smaller and much less complex cerebral cortex means their creativity has been limited to rudimentary tool use and, after years of training, to learn no more than 50 words. However, in the last two decades, the research world has been turned on its head by the discovery of highly advanced creativity in lower animals, such as birds and cephalopods. For decades, we thought that clever birds like the blue tit were acting mostly on instinct. But maybe we should have given them more credit for their creativity, like a talking parrot and a murmuration of starlings. As well as looking towards animals, scientists also look back in time for a greater understanding of human creativity, even as far back as ancient cave art. Bisons, bears, horses and deer, painted with red and yellow ochre, black carbon, white china clay, emerge from a grey stone backdrop. Cave paintings, often tens of thousands of years old, are some of the most beautiful manifestations of human creativity. The oldest was thought to be more than 40,000 years old, the youngest just 10,000. After this, it just stopped. Why? Nobody knows. But this is far from the greatest mystery associated with cave paintings. Far more puzzling is the idea that for a period of 30,000 years, cave paintings did not change, neither in their technique nor in their subject matter. So why did human creativity remain stagnant for such a long time? Why did we continue to mostly draw just animals for 30 millennia? My favourite hypothesis is a theory proposed by Clayton Eshelman, the poet and explorer, that these paintings were a love letter to our primitive past. They were a lament for the animal within us as our human future emerged into the light. Neuroscientists also explore how brain damage and disease can affect the creative process. The most satisfying cases are the ones where damage appears to enhance rather than reduce creativity. That brings us to Anne Adams, a professional artist whose work was well thought of in the Bay Area of San Francisco in the 1990s. Then she began to develop the earliest signs of dementia. While her language, memory, judgment and reasoning began to disintegrate, on the other hand, she had a noticeable increase in her artistic output. Her neurology team watched as the brain began to shrink, apart from one small area in the right parietal cortex, which for an unexplained reason was not impacted. Had they discovered the center for creativity in the brain? Towards the end of her life, Anne became obsessed with Maurice Ravel's most famous piece of music, Bolero. Bolero is an exercise in compulsivity, and she painted all 340 bars as a figurative representation of that relentless feeling. Little did she know that over 60 years earlier, in 1928, Ravel himself was suffering from the same disease when he first wrote Bolero. Some strange creative force carrying both artists to their end. The emergence of real-time brain imaging techniques in the last 30 years has confirmed that the right parietal cortex does indeed play an important role in the creative impulse. So too does environment, genetics. Yes, some families are more creative than others. Unstructured play, trying new things, boredom, avoiding stress and plenty of sleep. They all support creativity. And experience too. You can blame that stupid decision you made as a teenager on your frontal lobe. So from animals and birds to cephalopods, and from early humans to modern day maestros, the unravelling of creativity still needs a lot of work. But I like to think that listening to this as a young scientist who will be inspired by these simple but beautiful stories to continue this work.
Professor Colin Doherty of St. James's Hospital there.